Welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast, where sales leaders teach you what's working for them and how you can build it yourself.
This episode of the Predictable Revenue Podcast is brought to you by our sales coaching and consulting services. Are you looking to create repeatable, scalable, and predictable revenue? We've helped thousands of companies grow their business with tailored expert advice backed by testing to ensure they establish the best practices that'll work for them. Head over to bit.ly/predictable revenue coaching to learn more. Most companies don't fail because they don't have great vision. Most companies don't fail because they don't have amazing people and amazing culture. Most companies fail because of an unsexy side of the business that we don't talk about enough. Only 0.04% of companies scale past 10 million in revenue. And the thing that sets those companies apart is their go-to-market process. And we're going to teach you about that today. I'm your host, Sarah Hicks. And today on the Predictable Revenue Podcast, I'm going to be chatting to an expert about how to figure out if your go-to-market process is broken and how to fix it. He's a best-selling author who co-founded Terminus in 2014 and ever since has been teaching the business of marketing with his signature frameworks. He's an international keynote speaker, was named one of the top 21 B2B marketing influencers in the world, and he's the host of a top 50 business podcast called Flip My Funnel. Sangram Bhadre, welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast.
Sarah, you got this down. I love it. Thank you so much for having me. It's exciting to talk about go-to-market, which is, by as you said, it's unsexy, but literally the reason why companies make it or they fail.
Exactly. So what makes this topic so pertinent right now? Why are we talking about this today?
It's so interesting. I think I took the last 2 years of COVID literally to pick up the phone and talk to anybody, because that's what the world has become. And I've had a conversation with Brian Halligan, who was the CEO of HubSpot, now the chairman, Jeffrey Moore, who wrote Crossing the Chasm, Nick Mehta, CEO of Gainsight, a $100 million company. So all these different CEOs and executives, including VCs. And what I found that across the board, each one of them says that, hey, this is the most important thing that drives our business, but they don't talk about it that way. As a matter of fact, Sarah, if you ask around who in companies do they think owns go-to-market, they might think they might say CMO or CRO, but it's actually the CEO. So to me, what makes this super relevant right now more than ever is because there are a lot of companies, there's a lot of money floating into startups and early stage companies, but you would see that right about 5 million or so, or right around 10 million, either they get acquired or they literally, you stop hearing about them and you go back, look at that. All right, what happened to that company? And the reason they die or they get acquired too early is because of this valley of death, which is companies not figuring out their go-to-market process. And most importantly, they do not evolve their go-to-market process the way they evolve their product or they evolve their team. They do not think about go-to-market at all.
Yeah, makes sense. So how can a company now who's maybe starting to get to that 5, 10 million point and hoping, of course, to scale beyond it, how can they uncover whether or not their go-to-market is broken?
You know, one of the things we did in the book, Sarah, was after all these conversations, I remember this conversation like yesterday with Brian Halligan, who also gave the book. He defined go-to-market as a product. He said it's not a strategy that you go and with your buddies and your executive team on a retreat and then come back. No, that's vision casting. What go-to-market is like a product, which means every day, every week, every month, you are making trade-offs in your organization to say, should we hire another salesperson or should I give money to marketing? Or should we acquire a company or should we partner a company? Should we open an office in EMEA or should we figure out adding more engineers on the product team to actually create a really scalable ecosystem? So there are all these trade-offs. That is part of go-to-market. And what's interesting across the board is that we discovered that there are four questions that are consistent no matter what stage of the business you're in. And that's really became the MOVE framework: market, operations, velocity, and expansion. So as long as people can ask those questions, which literally I think we're not talking about anything new, we hope that we're giving vocabulary to everybody to ask these questions. Who should we market to? Are our operations effective? When can we scale our business? That's the velocity question. And then finally, where can we grow the most? Which is the expansion question. So if you can ask these questions in every stage of the business, what's interesting is the answers are different. based on what that stage is, but the questions are the same. So it creates simplicity, but also freedom within framework based on what stage of the business you're in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And we'll talk more about kind of how to lay the foundations and move through each stage in just a second. But what are some of those kind of telltale signs that you're missing something? Like, how can you, you know what I mean? Like, you're like, oh, I should be scaling, but these things are happening. What are those things?
All right. So get ready for some humbling conversations that, you know, if you're listening, if you're driving, you might want to pause and stop, because these are humbling. And if you're nodding, that's okay. And every organization goes through it. But here's how you will figure out if your go-to-market is broken or not. And if it's broken, you know this topic is very important to you to drive your business forward. So an example of that will be, let's say you have some heroic sales process, a couple of heroic salespeople who all of a sudden at the end of the month, they're able to take the company forward, crush the numbers, over the bridge, onto the moon, and you're able to get to that number. And you have to rely on these heroic things every month or every quarter to get to your number. Your go-to-market is broken. Another example is like, you know, you're able to get new customers very quickly because your marketing and the product demo is really cool. But when you're about to renew, the customer says, I don't know if I have got the ROI from this product. I don't think your product does what you actually sold and it didn't deliver it. Your go-to-market is broken because your marketing and sales and your customer success is not necessarily the same. Another thing is like, you actually might not be able to scale or forecast your business. Let's say you forecast this quarter, but you can't forecast the next quarter. It's not predictable. And one thing that probably something that is not talked about much is your executive team is talking about this big game, this amazing stuff that's coming. And the people on the floor are like, I don't know what you're talking about. We're not keeping our existing customers happy. You're talking about this new thing. So if all these things are happening, those are the telltale signs that your company has a go-to-market problem and it's broken and it needs to be fixed. So next time this happens, my encouragement, Sarah, to everybody is to pause, dive deeper in it, go see what needs to happen, and hopefully somebody take the baton and try to fix that, try to address that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And is this something, of course, there are going to be companies that are already at that stage and now they've got to kind of backtrack and fix some things that are broken. But how do you think if you are starting from the beginning, how do you set yourself up for success as you build and scale?
Oh, I love that question, Sarah, because one of the things we identified was these three stages, problem market fit, product market fit, and platform market fit. That's the second framework we have in the book. And quick sidebar on it. Brian, who's my co-author on this, we wrote this book almost 80% of the way. And then when we were talking and corroborating this with Jeffrey Morse of the world and Halligan of the world, they're like, but what stage of the business am I in? Like, you know, you need to tell me before we solve and go and address this problem, just like you're asking now. And so the problem market is a spot where companies are just figuring it out. They don't know if the problem is real enough and if people are going to pay. Product market fit, which you know very well, and your audience probably knows as well very well, which is it's a repeatable, scalable motion. You got it. And platform market fit, which Jeffrey Moore calls it and says that that's the next crossing the chasm, next chapter of it, where you now are able to sell more than one product and your market expands. So as an example, let's just take HubSpot as an example. They started with going after agency and marketers, then they settled on marketing automation as the thing that they focused on. That was their product market fit. And then now they have a flywheel, right? Like they can sell to marketing, sales, customer success, same thing for Salesforce. But you can even look at a B2C example. Think about Morning Brew or Skim. If you read any of those things, you'll see they started with a newsletter that focused in on millennials. And that's the problem. They don't like Wall Street Journal, but they like news. They want to send news like a friend sends to another friend. So those newsletters, there are about, I think, 7 million people that are signed up to that. Mm-hmm. Within 3 years or 4 years of their existence, they became, I think in 2018 or 2019, they became a $3 million business focused on that one business newsletter, product market fit. And then now they have platform market, which means they have newsletters for every type of industry, like tech, marketing, retail, real estate, all that stuff. So this idea of problem product platform goes across B2B, B2C, even talking about podcasting. Think about Joe Rogan, right? The guy who really is the king of podcasts. He started in 2009 with literally answering questions on Twitter, became the number one podcast in the world, and now has a $100 million deal with Spotify to expand beyond it. So the problem product platform is where the real idea is. So everybody needs to recognize and self-assess, if they haven't already, what stage of the business you're in. Are you in a problem market fit? Are you in product market fit? Are you in platform? And if you can go to the movebook.com, which is a like all the resources, all the templates, we created scorecard, Sarah, for companies for that exact reason. Because if you're in a problem market fit, you don't need to track your net retention rate, because that's, you're not even thinking about that. You don't have multi-product ROI, like, because you don't have multiple products. So there are scorecards we created for problem market fit, early stage, seed stage companies. If you're Series A, Series B, then we created a scorecard for you. And then all that's a product market fit. And in platform market fit, we created a go-to-market scorecard that track marketing, sales, customer success, product usage, all of it. You can literally go download on the movebook.com.
Awesome. Well, we'll make sure to include that on the show notes for the podcast and the blog, of course, so that people can, go fill it in and figure it out. Talk to me about kind of making the jump between each of those stages. So you start off in your problem market fit, you're starting to figure it out. There are people who kind of care about what you're trying to sell. What are the actions that you should be taking to make that jump from that to your product market fit?
I'm so glad you asked that, Sarah, because what we noticed in our research is companies don't fail in these stages. They fail as they transition between these stages. That's the valley of death. So the company, why a company wouldn't go from problem to product, is because of retention. They haven't figured out how to retain. You're able to get new customers because you're testing, you're doing everything you can. But what you will make you a product market fit company is because not only you're able to acquire great customers, you're able to retain, get great customers. That's the line that you have to draw. It's like, oh yeah, our retention rate is 80% or up to 100%. Now you can say you're a product market fit. So in our research, we found, and we wrote in the book, that you could be a $20 million company, 20 million, and still be in problem market fit because you haven't figured out the retention issue. So that's just from problem to product. What stops companies from becoming from product to platform is that one thing that happens typically when you have a great product, people are buying and you're seeing some success, maybe you get to the 10 million revenue, is that your customers are now 1 year old customers and they're like, we want more from you. You're gonna have competitors come in and they're gonna try to fight you on pricing and features. So all of a sudden your market knows about it and they're expecting like, well, what else do you got? So you are pushed automatically, if you're doing a great product market fit company, into like, well, we have to create more products, more services to support our existing customers, much less also to compete in the marketplace. And that pushes you into the platform market fit. But what stops them in the research, what we found, Sarah, was what stops them from them is because they haven't put together something we have talked about a lot in the book, is RevOps, revenue operations, where they don't have a single source of truth of where to invest the dollars. They still have marketing ops, sales ops, product ops, customer success ops, all siloed, making individual decisions, but they don't have a RevOps that will make the most important decision for the CEO. Oh, we need to hire sales enablement. We need to essentially focus on customer advocacy and all these decisions that a CEO has to make. It's really hard. And I think that's why a lot of companies stay in product market fit, even when they're 100 million in revenue.
Right. And when do you think is the best time to start incorporating RevOps? Is it like right when you found product market fit so that you're ready to scale?
That will be a great place. I think if you're in problem market fit, it's probably not the right time. Almost the opposite, because in that stage, you're just figuring things out. If you try to centralize too much, it might almost work against you because you're not ready as an organization. So if you're in a problem market fit, probably not a great time to have RevOps, but be thinking about it. But absolutely true. As soon as you get to product market fit, if you want to become a platform market, if you start moving in that direction, I think that's like the best time to saying, all right, we don't need any more conversation on who moved my cheese, right? Like that's what happens. Like, hey, where is that number? I updated that spreadsheet. You don't want that. You want your executive team to say, this is what we focus on. When a RevOps person is, I'll give you a quick story. Natalie Lee, who runs our RevOps at Terminus, she came in about a year and a half ago. And she literally would come in every Tuesday. We have an executive meeting and she runs at RevOps. She comes in and says, here's the go-to-market dashboard, which is what's on the movebook.com. We literally stole it from her and it's in the book. And we give her credit all day long around it. And she has this scorecard of marketing, sales, customer success, product, all of that. And she literally comes in and says, this is working, this is not working, here are the gaps. She reports to the CFO. She has no bone in the fight. So she's like, this is what it is, which allows everybody, Sarah, the CMO, the CRO, and everybody on the team and the CPO to say, oh, I'm a business leader in marketing. I don't need to defend my number. There's no my number because that's a RevOps number, right? So what they get to do is to say, hey, I'm a business leader specialized in marketing, Mr. or Ms. CMO. Here's how I can help. Or the sales leader would say, I'm a business leader specialized in sales. Here's how I can help in that. So I think the RevOps is fundamentally a different mindset an organization can have. And most importantly, as you become between product and platform, it might be one of the most important. As a matter of fact, I've been saying this now for about a few months now, that the second most important role in the organization outside of the CEO is the head of RevOps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. There's definitely more of a shift happening right now where people are starting to recognize that, but there's not the maybe like the base of knowledge that there is in some of the other, you know, aspects of the whole revenue generating organization. And so I think people want to do it, but they don't know how. And so it's so helpful to have, you know, people like you, leaders like you on the podcast to share with them, and they go, okay, I actually know how I can take those steps now because I recognize that we need to unify, break down those silos, all of that stuff. But how on earth I actually do that is actually quite difficult to work out. I had another question for when you are moving from product market fit to platform market fit, how do you decide what to build for your customers and kind of not get pulled in the wrong direction with something that might not work?
Oh, no, that's so, so good. So Jeffrey Moore, who wrote Crossing the Chasm, he recommended when we were showing this framework to him, you just get his blessing. He gave us a quote from the book and all that. He's like, you got this wrong. And I was like, oh my God, like, we're about to go publish this thing, right? You know, what did we get wrong? And he was like, no, you just got the order wrong. We had sales, marketing, and customer success as the three teams that are part of the go-to-market. Your go-to-market team is not your sales team. It's not just your marketing and sales. It's actually marketing, sales, and customer success. But he said, you got your order wrong. He said, I was literally with Mark Benioff and his whole executive team last week. We're doing like a Monday morning 9 a.m. call. He said, if you do not put customer success ahead, literally in every way possible, as you become a platform market fit, you will never become a true platform market fit because your customer success team will tell you which customers are good customers, which customers more of what you need, which customers you shouldn't be getting at, where should your pricing be. If they are not part of delivering and figuring out your ICP and the next set of customers and things to build, then you got it wrong. So I think that's the part that I feel if as early as problem market fit, if anything can be pulled earlier, would be the foundation of your go-to-market team from the very beginning. If you can have sales, marketing, and customer success together, deciding on this, riffing on this, so that customer success is not getting the brunt of the bad customers and stuff and retention issue, it will just change the economics. So that's how you would know. It's not even your customers, because your customers are telling to your CS team all day long. They have that list like ready to go. So if you can get CS involved in it, you're going to get so much more details of your customers that a lot of times companies go and say, let's talk to their top 10 customers. Well, your CS has been talking to them every day. Like, let's just get them part of the process early on.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I think that's where a lot of people or a lot of, you know, leaders, businesses, whatever, get that wrong, is that you're always wanting to learn from the front lines. Yeah. And in your mind, the front lines is sales. That's it. Yeah. Like everything else is behind the scenes, but it's not. It's like a little, I don't know, what did the Spartans do where they like walked up in a circle? Like the front lines is actually all the sides. It's not just the one, the sales are not the one front line. Yeah.
Yeah.
What an interesting perspective.
Yeah. And even the sale, I mean, if you think about the sales, there's budget for marketing, a lot of budget. Their budget gets cut as soon as the pipeline number dips or the revenue dips for a quarter. So their budget is kind of flaky. Sales, whatever they want, right? Like, because if sales is good, all sense.
Pour it in the top funnel.
pour in more of it. But customer success, they got no budget. Like, you know, they are like this pure, like, you know, poor third leg on a stool that never gets to really move up in it. So CS is really, really, so I have a lot of empathy for the CS team. And I really, truly believe that in our own company, we're now raising over 50 million in revenue. And I feel like, gosh, if at 5 million and 10 million, if CS was part of all of it, we would have avoided so much pain.
Yeah, absolutely. Tell me about kind of how the outbound motion factors in across these three different stages. If someone's going for like a sales-led go-to-market where they are doing outbound quite early rather than, you know, waiting for that product market fit, how do you think that outbound motion changes, or what should people be looking for throughout the different stages through outbound?
Yeah, so M is for market, like, so that's where a lot of the outbound motion is. So in early stage, it is typically founder-led, sales-led. It makes sense. You're looking at total addressable market in a problem market fit. Anybody with the pulse, anybody that will actually give me a shot. Like, I remember making call. I remember the first deal that we closed. I was on a call with my co-founder, Eric Vass, and we called this person. Her name was Gretchen. Gretchen. And she is, and we went through the demo, and she's like, "Oh, this is great. You know, how much is it for?" I had no idea. To put the phone on mute, as my like co-founder, like, "Hey, what do you think?" He's like, "Dude, you're the marketer, figure it out." And I'm like, $250 a month. He's like, "Yeah, sounds great." Unmute. And I said, "Hey, Gretchen, $250 a month." And she's like, "Great, send us the purchase order." "Okay, sounds good." And then Googling, what is a purchase order? Like,
oh, no.
No idea how to do this stuff. So there's nothing wrong being in a problem market fit and figuring things out. That's how entrepreneurship, that's what it is. You just figure things out. And at that time, your market is all about just figuring out, is this problem real? Would people pay money for? Like, literally, that was 11 o'clock call, 12 o'clock demo that I had. We sold it for $500, right? You just figure out what is the end point where people would say, "Oh, that's too much." And then you go back from that. But when you get to product market fit, you don't talk about TAM. You don't try and get everybody out there. You actually go after segments. And we call it TRM in the book, total relevant market. You actually figure out, oh, if we go after manufacturing leaders or companies in Fortune 500, at these many employees in it for this price point, we actually have a great chance of closing those deals. Now you're talking about segments, and you over rotate and you hire people specialized in that, and you just go while you have some percentage testing some other things, but you know what works right now. And then as you move further in platform market fit, you no longer pretty much think about net new customers, because like in our case, we have 1,000+ customers. We think their sales team is trying to get net new customers, but there's enough brand where we do get a ton of inbound. But what we are focused on are customer cohorts. We are thinking about what are our 20%, 30% of the customers that are paying us a million or more for our product and services. We came a long way from $250 a month. And then we want to make sure that we are able to find more of those customers, or turn more of those the rest of the 80% of the customers into like those 20% of the customers. So we're thinking so much differently. We're not even thinking about net new. That's a portion of it, but that's really where the more money is, where value is. We want to retain all of them. We want to focus on creating more wallet share. So your question about, like, you know, market, it always, again, the question is the same, but now, as you can see, it is for the problem market fit, it is TAM. For your product market fit, it is segments. And in for your platform market fit, it's customer cohorts. And in the book, we align for each stage of the business for each of the MOVE framework elements.
Awesome. Well, tell me a little bit more about the book and where I can find it and where everyone here can find it and read it.
Yeah, it literally last week it hit Wall Street Journal bestseller and USA Nice. Today. So we are very proud and happy about the work that has gone into it. So it can be found anywhere books are sold, Amazon or whatnot. But if you go to themovebook.com, we're such a bad marketers. It doesn't even have email address. We don't even capture email addresses. So I don't know how long that's going to last, but if you go to themovebook.com, you can literally download all the scorecards, templates, and slides and all that stuff that we have built together for the book.
Perfect. Amazing. And I think that's a perfect place to wrap it up. We've got such a good complete picture of the whole of the three different stages of how you can be one of those 0.04% of companies that make it past that just terrible, terrifying, black hole that exists for so many companies. If people want to get in touch with you specifically and they want to learn more from you, Sangram, where can they do that?
Sarah, I think, first of all, you're an incredible host. So thank you for having me. If anybody wants to get in touch, like, you can just DM me on LinkedIn. As a matter of fact, if you DM me on LinkedIn and tell us what you liked about this conversation, I'll send you a signed copy of the book. How's that?
What a deal. What an incredible deal. Thank you so much, Sangren. It was brilliant having you on the podcast. Can't wait for everyone to hear this. And thank you to all of you guys for joining us for another episode of the Predictable Revenue Podcast. Make sure that you hit that subscribe button on YouTube if you haven't already, so that you can be kept abreast of the weekly podcast with great readers like Sangram that come out every week.
Thank you.
Catch you next time.